Way of the Warrior, your MMA show.
10 seconds.
Rolls into it.
Wow, he might get it.
And then it's all over!
Way of the Warrior.
One of his legs could fight at welterweight, I'm sure.
Probably.
Full mount, here's some ground and pound.
I think the first 2 minutes were everything we thought it was going to be, and then after that, it was the surprise of the night.
If it happens in MMA, you hear about it here. Your MMA show, Way of the Warrior.
It is Way of the Warrior, Eric O'Brien, along with Obi-Wan Kenobi, Ken Evans, covering everything in the world of March Madness brackets. So if you want to know what picks you need to complete your brackets, this is absolutely the wrong show.
Yeah, who did you pick, Eric?
I didn't pick anybody.
Yeah, you...
Because I have no interest at all, actually.
You told me I was speaking German earlier.
I just don't... There's so much pressure in these office pools here at the radio station that I can't even...
Just give them the $10 and fill it out.
First of all, like, I might as well just go... I'd rather buy you guys a round of beer than just give some random dude downstairs $10 to fill out something. I have no interest.
Yeah, but for the next month, we can all complain about it and scream about it.
Well, but I won't do that, though. This is the same reason I won't do fantasy with you guys, because you take it way too seriously, and I just
don't know why you hate fun. I'm just wondering.
It's in my nature to hate fun, which is, of course, why we're doing this show. Okay. It is Way of the Warrior, as always, brought to you by Gun Lake Casinos and Onnit Supplements online at onnit.com. A huge, huge weekend in the UFC. UFC 171 is in the books, not without its share of controversy, as there was some fair share of ridiculous judging, as usual. But we have a new welterweight champion. His name is Big Rig Johnny Hendricks, beating out Robbie Lawler. I don't know. I know Ken and I talked about this a little bit, Joe. I don't know that I would call it a controversial decision, but I certainly think even though Robbie Lawler chose the high road and decided not to debate it, I think you could probably debate it a little bit.
Yeah, it came down to the fifth round, and actually I think it came down to the last couple minutes of the fifth round.
Maybe even that last minute with that takedown,
yeah,
maybe.
Yeah, absolutely sealed the deal with that, and I mean, that just makes for a great fight for the fans.
Well, at least we got to see a welterweight title fight. Haven't seen one of those in like 6 years.
And so, you know, out of that, we get, of course, that Hendricks had injured his bicep 2 weeks earlier. He might have dropped out. He decided not to. He's getting surgery. So the UFC steps back into this quagmire of, like, worst case scenario. You have this exciting fight that everybody is talking about, whatever side you're on. And you've got this guy, again, who's on the shelf for however long he's going to be on the shelf. The other thing that I walked away thinking... was that we're going to have multiple welterweight champions in the next 24 months.
Do you really think so?
Yeah, why is that?
I do. I think when you've got a guy like, let's take Johnny Hendricks, for example, going against Robbie Lawler. Robbie Lawler shook off just about everything that Johnny Hendricks threw at him.
Do you really think he shook it off? I don't think he was.
Save for that fifth round when he was clearly tired, right? Mm-hmm. And that was the game changer, was that fifth round. Robbie can go back and shift his way he trains or whatever he's going to do. I just thought... For the dude who, if you've watched all of Johnny Hendricks' fights, save for the George St. Pierre fight, you've watched all of them, you know what his weapon is.
Mm-hmm.
He just cocks, locks, and knocks you out, yeah. You know, out cold. And he was not able to do that with these two guys.
Well, he was fighting with that one bicep, too.
We can all make excuses, and I would tell you this, Joe, that nobody walks into that octagon 100%,
oh, yeah,
and nobody
totally
made
agree.
Him walk into that octagon. If you weren't 100% and thought that you were going to lose, you didn't have to take the fight. Yeah. That's why we have 19 welterweights on the card. Any one of them would have loved to have the strap on Saturday night.
For sure. I do give him credit for putting on a performance like that with one bicep. And in the first round, he got a hairline fracture in his shin, his left shin, from kicking. So, I mean, that's quite the performance, fighting with a hairline fracture and one bicep.
On the other side, Joe, I'm pretty sure that Robbie Lawler didn't walk out flawless.
No, absolutely
I'm
not.
I'm sure
yeah.
he's also pretty tore up.
Yeah, but you wanted to make a case.
I want to make a case that if you look at this card, Ken, this is where I'm going with this. If you look at this card, you know, looking at guys like Tyrone Woodley, who literally just threw... It's an unfortunate scenario of what happened there, of course, to Carlos Condit, but literally threw a man on the ground and broke the dude's knee in the process.
Right, but yeah. I mean, you're not even letting me finish. I'm letting you finish.
You
know, but
and then you see a guy like Hector Lombard who throws Jake Shields around the octagon like he weighs 6 pounds. I just think there aren't a lot of guys at welterweight who are... Of the fight IQ of a George St. Pierre. There are a lot of really talented fighters right now in welterweight, which makes it a really exciting weight class. But we're right back to what I see happening at 155 is that, you know, let's wait and see what happens with Anthony Pettis. But prior to that, it was, you know, hot potato. Who's got the belt this time? Somebody new comes in and takes the belt. Somebody new comes in and takes the belt. And I think, A, that's exciting for fans in a totally different regard than, say, rooting for John Jones to lose. But I looked at Saturday night, guys, and I saw a lot of talented welterweights, all of whom could be competitive.
Well, I see what you're saying in that, and it was a great night for the welterweights. That Carlos Condit injury, I'm not saying it was a fluke injury by any means. You don't take credit away from a guy who's able to drop you and throw you on the ground. That's a risk you take when you keep going. And Carlos, I don't think, minded going to the ground there. He didn't mind it at all, but he went to the ground one too many times, obviously jarred the knee once he went to spin around, and I have had a very similar thing happen. There's nothing you can do about it. Your foot plants, your body goes the other way. What gets caught in between is that patella, and it went sideways. It came back in before he landed on the ground. You know, I don't know if I see anything from Tyrone Woodley that's going to make me think he's a contender. I know we're going to get to the fact that he's probably a little mad at Joe Rogan.
Yes.
Thinks he should have that title shot.
We can have that debate, too. That's not really what I'm pushing for. I'm just saying these guys are training harder than ever. They're all going to come in with injuries. And, I mean, we were down to the wire, literally. I mean, we could debate, but I would say the last 60 seconds of the fifth round is that fight. And if it's going to be that competitive, which I'm all for, mm-hmm. I don't see a guy like Johnny Hendricks, as talented as he is, able to stay in the top of the heap with all of these other guys below him.
I may agree with you there, but I may have a little more of an issue with the way you and I look at that fight a little differently. I know you want to give, what, 10-8 to... Robbie Lawler in the middle of that fight?
I think the third round was a 10-8 round. Because, you guys can laugh at me all you want, but if we go to, and we'll jump around a little bit, if you go to that Jake Shields fight, you still have judges who looked at that Jake Shields fight and gave him a round.
Well, I'm talking...
And these are guys that have this as a job. I don't have that as a job, but I look at that round, and you could pick round one, or maybe even round two if you wanted to do 10-8 Johnny. I'm fine with that, but we need to do more of those.
I don't disagree we need to do more of those, but I think in that case, just because you rock a guy doesn't mean you almost finish the fight. And again, I may agree, Robbie Lawler's a veteran. He knows what to do. He's not going to necessarily jump in there and try to finish a fight just because he has a guy rocked. He wants to pick his moments. But if you don't take that opportunity to try to finish the fight, you don't get credited with that 10-8 round. You've got to jump in there and try to do it.
In your mind, Ken, the only way to get a 10-8 round is nearly finishing the fight.
Yes.
Because in the 10-point must system, you can score anything from 1 to 10.
You can, but there's not enough people using it until, and I've been the advocate for people using that more often.
But what I'm saying is I would imagine in my mind, although, you know, you guys will agree with me that this has never been done, I would imagine in my mind if you were beating a guy up one side of the octagon to the other, and he did literally zero for that round, a 10-5, in my mind, not out of the question.
Okay, that's fine if we get guys who start doing that. But,
yes, yeah.
But in this case, all you really had, you had a guy who was able to rock Johnny Hendricks a little bit after he'd gotten beaten up for two rounds. So it was surprising the disparity between that round and the prior two rounds certainly made it look like he was doing much better than he was. But really, he rocked him, then he pitter-patted him. He landed most of the shots. He won the round clearly. 10-8, he never went for a finish. I think he might have had an opportunity to jump in there and finish, and knowing about these injuries now with Johnny Hendricks, maybe he should have, but he didn't, and he doesn't get the credit for trying to finish if he doesn't try to finish. He had the guy rocked. He could have probably stepped in there and tried to finish. I don't know. He doesn't get that credit.
And I see where you're coming from, but I guess I look at it a different way, and feel free to jump in here, Joe. Like, if a 10-9 round, for example, is you won the round versus me. It was a very even match, but you won the round. 10-8 would be I won the round a fair amount better than you did. 10-7 would be I nearly ended the fight and wasn't able to, in my opinion. We don't see this, but if you're looking at the 10-point must rules and you're reading them, that is the correct way that you would be using them.
I think the problem is there's too much interpretation. There needs to be more clarification on what constitutes a 10-8 or a 10-7. Right now, there's no consistency, and that's why...
Well, especially when you see Jake Shields, I don't even know how he won a round. All he did was get thrown around for 15 minutes.
Exactly. So I think we'll be having this debate until, the Athletic Commission...
Well, we've had it since the show started.
Well,
so
we have, but we are, and it's slow, but we are seeing more 10-8s. We are seeing more instances where that's happening. I think that will keep happening, and maybe we'll get to a point where the 10-point round is stupid to start with. We don't need 10 differentiations between fighters.
What would you do? 5, 3?
3 is probably good.
Okay.
You get a 3, 2, or a 1. And if you want to have a zero, I probably not don't have a problem with that. And so is it 3-2? Is it 3-1? Is it 3-0? You know, 3-0, you probably won the round and beat the guy.
Probably.
Up. Yeah, probably won the round. probably able to finish the fight, but you didn't, even though you tried. I mean, you don't need that many points, and I think that's where everybody gets hung up when you have numbers that go that high. And what is this really? If you work out percentages, is this 10% better than that guy? No, but that ends up being a 10-9 round where a guy won the round. Is it 20% better? I think we'd all say in that fight that in that third round that I think Robbie Lawler's much more than 20% better than Johnny Hendricks, but the historical way to range these fights is you've really only got 2 or 3 points to play with, right?
Yeah, and look, and I don't want anyone to start sending Facebook comments or tweet at me. I've had enough hatred about MMA on my Twitter account this week.
That guy has 26 followers.
I know. I should listen to him. But
he trains UFC.
But I'm not here advocating that I think the wrong guy won. It was a fantastic fight, and the fans certainly won on Saturday night. I'm just saying I would like to see a little bit more varied scoring because I think that there was a wide swath of stuff that you saw in that five rounds. You know, there were 10-8 rounds. There were 10-10 rounds. There were 10-9 rounds, in my opinion.
Right.
And you could still get to the same end result. Johnny Hendricks is your champ, which I'm totally fine with. I just think you've got, like Ken was alluding to, you've got these guys that are cemented into this. Well, it's 10 or it's 9. It's 10 or it's 9. It's
old school
or
boxing
9.
Judging,
yes.
Right?
Well, but even in boxing, I would say
you don't need that differentiation in boxing.
Even in boxing, I think if you beat a dude for 2 straight minutes up and down the squared circle, that's not a 10-9 round.
It shouldn't be, but that's how it's scored, right?
I know, yeah. But I mean, that's also flawed,
right?
Because I would imagine that if you put it outside into a street fight and you beat the hell out of me for 5 straight minutes. No one went, well, I mean, Joe did all right.
Right.
That guy's unconscious and bleeding on the sidewalk. But, I mean, that was okay. You know, he was still in it. He, at any point, he could have come out of unconsciousness and leapt back up and ended that fight.
He almost woke up.
He was blocking very well with his face.
Co-main event.
But you will give it, though, that Johnny Hendricks very impressive considering the injuries. And I know none of those guys walking at 100%.
Johnny Hendricks is impressive, period. We don't need to add any asterisks to that. That was an impressive performance. The injuries on top of that obviously make it more impressive. But both guys, I think, won more than they lost. I know that sounds kind of weird with Hendricks, but Hendricks won a lot. He was the champion. But both of those guys picked up a lot of fans. We talked about this heading into this fight that this question of these two guys that are kind of on the precipice of being fan favorites, right?
Mm-hmm.
Not a lot of people are knowing who Robbie Lawler is with all that time in Strikeforce. What would that have to do? Both of those guys did exactly what they did from a brand perspective, in my opinion, to get people to come back and pay for both fights at this point.
And we'll probably see them again.
I imagine we
might see this fight again. It'd have to be soon because I don't know how much longer we're going to see Robbie Lawler in there, but they're both in a better spot. I agree with you there.
Yeah, that post-fight interview with Joe Rogan afterwards, Johnny Hendricks literally fell down to one knee. He was so happy. He thanked the UFC. I mean, he showed appreciation to the UFC, which a lot of guys don't. And without the UFC, he wouldn't have been in that ring at that point in time.
Well, not only that, Joe, I mean, to go back a fight, there's many of us that think he beat George St. Pierre. So
absolutely,
this was just
kind of
kind of a vindication of that moment,
right?
and a great chance to see what that welterweight division can bring. And speaking of the welterweight division, co-main event, Carlos Condit and Tyron Woodley, as we alluded to earlier, Tyron Woodley, during a takedown, was able to essentially begin the process of blowing Carlos's knee that then got blown with a leg kick. And then Tyron Woodley spent the rest of the week essentially going on a tirade about what a terrible human being Joe Rogan was. Because during the commentary, Joe Rogan was making a lot of comments about Woodley's gas tank and slowing down and not being able to continue to compete. And Tyron took offense
to
this.
Well, let's give credit at the level that he was at.
At the level that he was
at. The way he came in the first round. And I think we all agree.
He
fights like that. So Joe Rogan's not wrong. Guy just doesn't want to hear it.
And that's a problem, and I was saying this on Saturday night. It's a problem you have with Tyron Woodley and a problem you have with Hector Lombard. Both of those guys are brilliant and really dangerous for 7 minutes.
Right.
If you can get past 7 minutes, you might be able to either eke something out or at least achieve some sort of parity. So with a guy like Hector Lombard, And we'll jump ahead again. You know, put Hector Lombard in there with Johnny Hendricks. If Johnny Hendricks can't execute his striking game plan, all he really has to do is stay out of his reach and not be tossed all over the octagon and wait 7 minutes for the gas tank to wear out.
Well, and I know Tyron Woodley was upset, too, because he was talking about the punches and the throws, that was everything happening in the first round. He wasn't wrong. And I get why a fighter especially or a man would be upset when another man's sitting there and he's critiquing what you're doing. And he doesn't go in there and fight in the octagon. He knows what he's talking about, but he doesn't do that. But, I mean, he's right. And this is just, you know, this happens in every sport where guys get mad at the announcers. But right. Carlos Condit was taking those punches. You know what? You didn't knock him out. So don't criticize Joe Rogan for talking about those punches not having an effect. You spun his knee out. And you did that. You did that to him. You dropped him on the ground over and over again. And eventually you kicked him and you spun his knee out. You get that. You get credit for that. You didn't knock him out.
Nope.
Is that what you wanted to do, Tyrone? Did you want to get credit for all those big fists that you were throwing? Because I was watching the same fight Joe Rogan was, and I was floored by the fact that Condo was taking those punches.
But back to what I was saying a couple minutes ago, what you saw on Saturday night was there is a giant level up at 170. Mm-hmm. You know, when you take a giant level up, there are dudes that don't fall for one-punch knockouts. They are going to walk through that as many times as they possibly can.
And Condit did it.
Yes. You know, so your trick that worked when you were in Strikeforce and worked in lower echelon fighters in the UFC doesn't work when you get to the upper echelon. That's not to say you're not impressive. You literally did a takedown and blew a guy's knee out. That's super impressive, but it was not the thing that you wanted to be known for. But Carlos Condit is not a dude that gets knocked out. It's just not a thing.
Tyron Woodley is a great salesman. He does a really good job of selling his
record. Sold himself into this fight.
There's a number of other welterweights who've got better records over equal competition who aren't ranked as high as he is right now. And I guess that's debatable the way you're looking at me, Eric, but
it's
out there.
No, I mean, I think, look, as my Twitter account this week will show you, there are plenty of flaws in the ranking system. You've got to understand that the UFC, and this is where Ken jumps in all the time, the UFC is a business. And so Tyron Woodley can bring eyeballs to a fight against Carlos Condit. Okay, fine, you get the fight. And he walks out of that with a win. Fine, we now need to talk about you in the upper four or three in that welterweight division, which includes talking about if there's an opening, do you get that title shot?
Right.
Well, yeah, he hasn't fought the resume of many of the people at welterweight, but when you put on a performance like that and you get those eyeballs and it's on pay-per-view, it's got to be a contender, right?
Well, it's a situation, too, where you're getting that far. That's why you're getting criticized, so to speak. And I don't even take it as criticism, but I know a lot of fighters do, and a lot of guys are defensive about that. You're taking these fights. You're at this level. That's what Joe Rogan's job is to do. Wow, he's coming out fast. I don't know if he can do this for three rounds. He's never had to do this for three rounds against a guy like Carlos Condit. Nothing in that commentary is wrong.
No, and we... And
second round comes along. He's coming out slower this time, breathing a little heavy. Look at his stomach. Nothing about that commentary is wrong. I'm sorry that you're mad that that's happening in the fight.
Right.
You know, why are you mad? That's what I'm asking. That's Tyron Woodley, he's selling fights. He can call Joe Rogan names all he wants. And I can't wait because Joe Rogan's a guy who will ask him about it at some point.
Yep.
Joe Rogan has no qualms with doing it. It may be the next time he's in the cage after a win.
And Joe Rogan is also the guy, if you follow him on the underground, he's the first person to say that this stuff is helpful to him. Every bit of criticism he reads and either dismisses because it's ridiculous or goes, okay, there's some validity to that. I should change that. In this case, I'm sure he's going to dismiss it. But you're right. He's going to get in there with Tyron Woodley and go either I know that you hate me or why do you hate me or something along those lines, and Woodley's going to have to respond because the fans, the educated fans, and they're growing by the day, the educated fan is, they're going to be like, well, yeah, dude, he was totally right. You were not fighting as fervently as you were in round one. You won, which is awesome, but the way that you fight indicates to me as an educated fan that we get into five or, Lord forbid, we get to seven round fights, you're going to have a problem unless you change something about your training.
Yeah, and I get that he said, well, my game plan was to slow down, speed back up, slow down, speed back. When have we actually seen somebody do that effectively?
Right, it's not cross-training, we're fighting.
You got to go, and you got to go every minute of that fight. And I'm saving my cardio for that. Shut up. He can call me out now. I'm horrendous. We all saw that fight.
You are horrendous.
He was very impressive in it. And if you want to say, hey, he doesn't know my game plan, but he can judge what he sees, that's acceptable. To say the guy's horrendous at what he does, you can be mad about a lot of things about Joe Rogan's commentary. What happened in that Tyrone Woodley fight, doesn't even make the top 10 list.
Is not one of them.
Even if he was a little wrong, how much creative freedom or how much liberty do you give somebody like that? Now, you guys are both in mass communications. You actually teach it too, Eric.
Sure.
So how critical can you be of the guy? I mean, he's learning from it.
I don't know that you can be all that critical of him because he's A, very good at what he does, and B, it's a live fire drill. It's not that he doesn't get to record that. He just has to watch what's going on and respond. And if you watch that fight, you physically see the man slowing down. So as the analyst, right, you have to analyze, why did that guy slow down? Well, it's because he's giant.
Yes. Well, and it's another thing, too. He's got a level of experience where he's seen more fights than this fighter's ever been in.
Right.
Yes.
He's seen he's seen this over and over and over and over again. And the guy comes out, and Joe Rogan watches those guys at that level. Johnny Hendricks, Carlos Condit, watches George St. Pierre, watches guys like Nick Diaz, sees those guys, what level they're at, and he sees guys run at them over years and years and years. So when Tyrone Woodley comes out running out, throwing like everything's got to count, everything's got to connect, everything's got to knock a guy out, and getting brushed off on occasion by those punches, he's going too hard. He's not picking his pacing the right way. He's not doing this, and this. The guy gets a lot of leeway unless he's wrong. Because like Eric said, it's a live fire drill. And in almost every case in every sport you watch, something like that's going to happen. In fighting more so than any other, because what you're doing is you're picking apart how one person is reacting to one other person, which is very difficult to do in situations because fights can turn on a dime. And Joe says that all the time. But in that moment and what he's seeing and what's happening there in front of him is what he's supposed to relate. And, you know, he is the color guy. Right. That's the guy who explains a little more. That's the guy that tells us why something's happening. That's the guy who's predicting what may happen because of what just happened. So, Mike Goldberg's there to call it. Punch landed. Joe Rogan's there to tell us why he threw the punch that way and how it could have been better or worse had he done this or that.
And I think he does a brilliant job at it. The middle of the fight of the pay-per-view, probably the most surprising, I think, for everybody on Earth whose name isn't Miles Jury, as Miles Jury shows that Diego Sanchez might be closer to hanging it up than ever. Now, Diego has come out, and I think in a very classless move, said that he decided to eat beef tartare the night before the fight and got food poisoning. Therefore, he was sick, and that's why Miles Jury was able to get out of his way. Had nothing to do with it. You want to talk about a fighter who probably should call horrendous commentary? It would be Diego Sanchez, because Joe Rogan annihilated him on Saturday night with his tells, and he's got a lot of them. One of them being he bites down on that double mouthpiece and then runs at you. So, I mean, if anybody...
that's a lot of tells in one.
You know, if anybody has ever played Mike Tyson's Punch-Out and you're fighting King Hippo, it's the same fight. When King Hippo does his little thing and comes at you, you move out of the way.
Right?
You know?
Left,
so,
right?
You know, so if you're fighting Diego Sanchez or King Hippo, you kind of know what you're in for. But Miles Jury came and delivered. I walked out. I mean, we were all high on Miles Jury and excited to see what this fight was, but worried about the typhoon that is Diego Sanchez, and we didn't really see that. Diego was flat-footed. Diego was just not explosive, and then had these giant tells where he sits down before he punches, not sits down in his punches, and then bites down in the mouthpiece and
runs at you.
He
sits on a stool before he punches.
Yeah, then he runs at you.
It's a tough one, too, because for Diego Sanchez, I mean, he's coming off the fight of the night, even though he's coming off that loss.
Yeah, but to get a fight of the night with Diego Sanchez these days, you have to be dumb enough to stand in the middle of the ring and trade with him. And not that Gil Melendez is dumb, but Gil Melendez loves that sort of a fight. Well, if you're a guy like Miles Jury who knows this is a giant leap, Ken, you're like, yeah, I'm not. That's stupid. Not going to do that. I'm just going to outbox you because my boxing's better, and I know that you're going to bite down on your mouthpiece when you get your superpower, and then you're going to leap at me when somebody hits AA, BB, up, down, left, right, start. Left, right.
Let's pretend he's not lying about the raw steak. Let's pretend.
Okay.
Let's just give that just let's just play that game for a second.
Sure. Let's why not?
If you're a professional fighter and you've got one of your four work days a year the next day, and you're at the restaurant, go, oh, give me the stuff you're not cooking. Give me a plate of that. I love sushi. I'm not going to eat it before I got to go to work the next day if I work 4 days a year.
Right.
And I get there's time in the gym and all that stuff. The time you actually got to show up and win to make the money, though.
Yeah, I mean, like, I would imagine, and I don't know, I would love to, you know, talk to Kevin Lee, or maybe we should start asking, guys when they show up, like, what do they eat that night? Because I've always just assumed It was water, Pedialyte, bland chicken breasts, yeah, just, and some sort of yeah. some
chicken
sort of
cooked to yeah, death,
some sort of carb, and then that's how we start to put weight back on. And we use protein. Like I never, if you would have told me that they go out for sushi or they eat beef tartare or they're sucking down quail eggs or whatever they're doing, I would have been like, "That's really? That's what yeah. you're
two blowfish over here." Right? What do you mean you never cooked them before? Oh, give it a go.
Raw oysters to go.
So Miles Jury, a huge night for him. Jake Shields, an awful night against Hector Lombard. Ovince St. Preux kicking off the main event. And as I said, if you'd not seen him fight in Strikeforce and had missed all of his undercard fights, he's a guy that you should probably keep at least one eye on. That Von Flew choke was pretty awesome. And, you know, he overpowered Krylov pretty easily. And an impressive win from him.
That Von Flew choke, Eric, is that something easy to land? Why don't we see it much? Well, was it poor defense?
I don't think it's poor defense. I just think most people feel that if you're not familiar with the Von Flew choke, most people feel that you're not in trouble because it's not the traditional, that would be traditionally called a head and arm choke. But since it's on the other side, it's not traditional. And so you feel like, oh, I'm okay. Sure. The guy's on the wrong side or whatever. And so you can escape out. And then guys who know what the Von Flew choke is, which is named after Jason Von Flew from the Ultimate Fighter season that our friend George Grizel competed in.
Go to sleep.
You go the night, and that's what happens. So that, it's fun to see those things start to come out, and Sean and I have talked a little bit offline about just the ways in which jiu-jitsu is exploding and adapting and evolving away from all of the well, in two ways. One, most fighters are becoming defensive in nature. They learn defensive jiu-jitsu to sure. get out of these situations. And two, they're either doing one of two things. They're using newer moves like the Von Flew, and then, you know, 2 years ago it was the Colombian necktie. Everyone wanted to do any sort of Japanese necktie, whatever. Right. And then there's other guys who are just perfecting the things that are traditional. Ronda Rousey in the armbar. She perfects the armbar, and then she can get it on you in every position. And so right. It's fun to see that part of the sport evolving in that sort of way, in the same way that you see interesting kick combinations and punching combinations coming out. But as a fan of jiu-jitsu, it's fun to see stuff like this kind of pop out every once in a while, because you never, I mean, that's why it's named after a tough member, because you never see this thing happen in a real sort of situation.
Right.
All right. When we come back, we, of course, have another event this weekend. Could be another brilliant fight. It was Fight of the Year, or at least a nominee for Fight of the Year, I believe, when they first fought. Shogun and Hendo are fighting this weekend. We will talk about it next. It is Way of the Warrior.
Follow our Twitter account at Wow Show.
It is Way of the Warrior. Eric O'Brien, along with Ken Evans, Jovi-Wan Kenobi, in charge of all of the stats, Facebook and Twitter. So anything you see on there that is more interesting than my post, those all come from Joe. So make sure you comment on them and tell Sean he's wrong in whatever answer he gives you.
What is Sean? Where is he?
I'm not really sure. There's some interesting stuff going on with Sean that he'll be in and out, and then probably out for a minute and then back for a minute, and then we may be at some point bidding farewell to our friend who may be heading out west at some point. So we will keep you posted on that. But as of right now, I have no idea where he is.
Okay.
My best guess is he's at American Girl store in Chicago buying stuff for his daughter. I think that's the story I'm going to start telling.
It's all very reasonably priced.
Yes. Fox Sports 1 this weekend. We go to Brazil for the very last card in Brazil to allow somebody to be on TRT to compete. That person, Dan Henderson, as he takes on Mauricio Shogun Rua for a second time. This is the first time they fought was an absolute brilliant classic fight that anyone who loves this sport, if you've not watched it, should certainly spend a moment watching it. And if you want to see it relived again, you could probably see it on Saturday night. I mean, I always get nervous.
I think it's been on all week on Fox Sports.
Yeah, like, but when you see a fight like that, I always get nervous because it feels like one guy or the other figured out the Rubik's Cube for the second time around. Like, it never ends up being a second classic. One dude or the other dude gets a 1 minute triangle or a knockout in 12 seconds or something.
Who is that guy in this fight then?
I don't have any idea.
Yeah.
I would say it's Hua.
Who wins it?
Yeah. If there's going to be that guy who figured things out in that last fight, it's probably Hua. Dan Henderson, because I think in that last fight went in with a great game plan and obviously was doing well, and then almost let Hua back in and was able to eke out the win, I think we'd all agree.
Sure.
In that fight. So I think he gave him everything he had. I don't necessarily know if Hua did that going in, and he's going to be in Brazil, man. This
yeah.
It's going to be tough.
And, you know, and Dan has said all week that they're going to chant for him to die because that's what the Brazilian fans do. They always want you to die.
It was kind of scary at first when we heard the translation, and then it just. Oh, yeah,
now they just want,
it,
they want yeah. everyone to die, which, you
right.
know.
Right. It's a very slow moving disease they're wishing on us, apparently.
It's called life, Ken.
Right. That's it.
Yeah, they're wishing life upon
us. We're all slowly dying.
Think about that. That's your moment of zen inside the show.
Yes, the entire country of Brazil are philosophers who want to tell you that we're all slowly dying.
Speaking of dying, Dan Henderson is 43 years old.
Okay.
This is the last time he'll be able to use testosterone. He is, let's look here, 0-3 in his last three fights.
And who are those people? Remind people?
All killers. I mean, Vitor Belfort, Rashad Evans.
That was in Brazil, wasn't it? The Vitor Belfort fight?
Yeah.
Yep.
So, yeah, that's
yep.
a good one.
And then Lyoto Machida. So, I mean, you know, all killers, but the guy is 43, and without his juice, how far is
without
he
gonna get? Without his juice. Is that what we're really doing at this point? Let's remember, and as much as I don't like it, it is entirely legal, and he was told he could do it here. So you can be mad about it all you want, but...
I'm not mad. I'm just pointing out
you're
facts.
You're just saying...
Well, I mean, but it does raise an interesting question. Like, he's said all week, TRT is not what makes me good. My fighting style makes me good, and I won't deny that part of it, but it certainly helps you. And when you're 43 years old, you've got to ask yourself some questions. Dan obviously has a lot of other irons in the fire, so to speak, that he could pursue, so it's not like he needs to do this. He's just a dude, I think, that enjoys doing this. And Ken, when you and I saw him in Chicago take on Fedor, you could tell that, like, he did that because that was fun for him.
Well, I think you're dead on there, and I don't know if you and I thought we were going to see him again after that night.
No, because it just seemed like he was there because it was you want me to fight Fedor? That sounds like a blast.
Yeah,
totally.
I want to do that. I want to beat Fedor, and he went in there and he did it, and it seems like since then there's been a little up and down. Obviously a huge up with that win over Hua after that fight.
Yep.
But it seems like since then, we've seen a guy that's just kind of, for lack of a better term, going through the motions. And I know that that's a lot. He's doing a lot more than that phrase gives him credit for. But
yeah,
that's what it feels like when we're watching the fights.
And to that point, Ken, like what would be another fun fight for him at this point? You know, what would get him excited to do this again? Because, Joe, I think you're 1,000% correct. There aren't too many bullets left in the gun, so to speak, when you're 43 years old. You got to start making those decisions like Randy Couture had to, you know?
And you know, so Dan said this week that his goal is still to become the champion. I think that's a long road for him, especially at this age.
At that age and in this weight class?
Yeah, and if he loses Saturday night, he's going to be 0-4 in his last four outings. So I think it goes back to what Ken was saying last week, that these are feature fights, right?
Yes.
So he could get a paycheck for a feature fight on a Fight Pass or Ultimate Fight Night, something like that.
Just spitballing, who would that guy be? Even if he wins or loses, what's another feature fight we could do with him right now?
I don't know. Either way, it's going to be a little sad.
Is this 185 or 205? I always forget what Henderson.
Light heavy.
205 right now.
Yeah, that's a tough one, too, because that you said it before. There's those shark tanks. It's probably going to be somebody we don't know. That's the reality of this situation if that's where he goes. I don't know, though, Joe, if that's what he's in this for at this point, because that's not a big paycheck to be on Fight Pass.
No, but
Alexander Gustafsson will do that because he's in the middle of his career.
Yeah.
He would like to headline an event, and they fight in Sweden, right? That's where that last Fight Pass was?
It wasn't in Sweden.
It was in London.
The O2 Arena.
Which is sort of...
It was over there.
It was closer to Sweden than Cleveland is, but it was not actually Sweden.
Swedish. Sort of.
What they're
Swedish?
Oh, yes,
get it?
Yeah, got it. Okay.
Okay.
Also on the card, you've got CB Dalloway on the card. A fight that you should pay attention to because I think this will be one of the interesting ones. Fabio Maldonado taking on Gian Villante. I always mess up his last name, but that should be a war. Leonardo Santos is on the card. Hani Jason is on the card, who you may have recognized from some of the fights. If you've ever seen him fight in Brazil, he's the one that always comes out wearing the Jason mask, and he's one of the scarier dudes to come out of the Brazil Tough House.
I just thought that was Brazil. I thought, you know, you
right,
go to the
every fighter
store,
comes out.
You need to,
you know, but this
wear
is
something,
you know,
like that.
This we've talked about this before. This is one of those fights where you have a chance to kind of get a look at some of these other guys that you might not be familiar with. This is where there's different types of UFC events. Clearly, this past weekend was a lot of household names of fighters.
Mm-hmm.
That's why we want your $60. This weekend, we have two household names and a bunch of guys that would fall under the you're going to watch UFC as a thing.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I'm going to watch some UFC, whatever that means. Two dudes are going to get in, one dude is going to get out. That's the, you know, what I'm going to watch this weekend. And that's kind of what these cards are going to be built around in hopes of building up people like that we've been talking about. You know, some of the guys like Khabibov, you know, that come out of these cards that you're like, what's a Khabibov? I don't know what that is. And he puts on a spectacular performance, and then another, and then another, and then we're like, well, when does he get a title shot? That's what these nights are for.
Yeah, I think Eric gets a gold star for being able to pronounce all of these names.
I try and practice a lot.
The gold star, I don't think he did half of them right.
Yeah,
you just have to say them with
for
confidence.
For our interpretation, yes. Right? You know, it's coming confidence. On Sunday night at 7, which makes it a little easier for people to catch it. It's not date night. Less things are going on Sunday night.
It's right. Sunday?
Yeah, Sunday
See,
at
I'm
7.
Glad you told me. Wait, what happened to the plan we talked about that they wanted to keep these consistent? It was going to be Wednesday and Saturday no matter what, so we didn't do this stupid stuff?
Well, but it's Wednesday or Saturday somewhere.
Oh, yeah. Okay. And that's before they did 230 events.
Sunday's a terrible night, though. I mean, it really is TV-wise. You got to be careful on Sundays because...
Well, you've got two episodes left of The Walking Dead, and they literally dropped a nuclear bomb last week. And, you know.
I mean, well, and it's hard. There's no habit to check out things like that if it's not a Wednesday or Saturday at this point. I don't even know what's actually going on. You know, sports-wise, we're going to have March Madness sort of wrapped up by that time of night. They were going to have those games done, so... I didn't know this was even... See, I'm glad I listened to this show.
Yeah, they wouldn't be able to pull this off during the NFL season.
No, I just... It's a little frustrating because you have these things, and I get the Fight Pass stuff is going to be bouncing around a little bit when they're almost in Sweden and stuff like that. But, man, there's no reason. They're essentially in the same time zone in Brazil. Why can't you have this on a Saturday night?
My guess is what you just alluded to is March Madness. My guess is that they can't get it cleared anywhere, and you can't put Dan Henderson on Fight
Pass. Yeah, but Fox Sports doesn't have that at this point. That was only last week because it's...
They don't have anything this weekend?
No. I don't know if they have the NIT or not, but they don't have any of the March Madness stuff.
Gotcha.
The CBS has that, and it's on TNT and whatever stations. Fox has nothing to do with that. It just seems like the habit is wrong. Like,
NASCAR?
Nobody's going to go to a bar
bowling
on Saturday night or Sunday night and then go, oh, look, UFC's on. They're going to be there Saturday and maybe check it out.
So, well, it's going to be on Sunday. You'll either check it out or you won't check it out.
I don't care. I'm watching Saturday. I'm watching it Saturday.
So if you would like to know the results of the fights on Saturday, a day before they happen, follow Ken on Twitter at the Ken Evans.
Yeah.
And he will let you know who's going to win. Some other big news out of fight camp. We've talked for the better part of a year and some change about Dwayne Bang Ludwig's impact on Team Alpha Male. And it was a bombshell this week that he is now leaving the team, which comes as somewhat of a surprise to him. He had a private conversation with Uriah Faber and said, hey, dude, I really want to get back home to Colorado. I want to start my own gym. I've learned a lot here. It's been a great experience. Obviously, everybody's welcome to come train with me, whatever, you know, but this was that step I needed to make. Thank you for this stuff. I'm planning it right now. We'll talk later. And Uriah goes, okay, hang on. I'm just writing a press release about how we're firing you and you're out next week and sends out a press release and tells the whole team. And Dwayne's like, whoa. Okay. Like, it's not even till May and I'll do everyone's camps. And so
was that out of spite, Eric?
I don't know it, because I mean, we've had Uriah on here a number of times. I know Sean has hung out with him, and every report you have and every interaction I've had with him in person or on the phone, he seems affable enough that it doesn't seem like there's a lot of, like, that's not a thing that he has, like a vengeance.
Right. Okay, can we remember what the name of the freaking team is?
Yes.
Team Alpha Male. So there's clearly some type of dominance issues you've got. Okay. And you have a guy who walks up and goes, yeah, I'm going to leave you guys. And you've got to imagine that.
Now, remember, a guy who essentially changed the gym. It's the winningest gym in the UFC right now.
Coach of the year, 2013.
Coach of the year, 2013.
But all of that in play, how much credit has he been given for the big comeback we've seen from Uriah Faber in the past couple years? He's been given a lot. You got to wonder if that's going to wear on a dude. Like, I'm the one going in there and fighting. I'm the one who's actually taking the punches and throwing the punches. And every time Uriah had a fight, boy, Dwayne Ludwig, man, that Team Alpha Male, half the time you don't hear the name Uriah Faber.
It almost got a little uncomfortable, actually.
This part of the show brought to you by the word supposition. Go ahead, though.
I'm just doing a lot of that. But... You're asking the question, why would all of this happen? I certainly think you've got some reasoning there if you want to put them together.
You do, but on the same side, yes, you're getting a lot of insider talk about Dwayne Ludwig, but he's not building his own brand. And a guy who's been able to come in there and be nothing short of brilliantly successful, every person that's ever trained at Team Alpha Male in the last year will mention his name just as much as his name gets mentioned. It's clear that he needed to do something on his own. And I'm sure maybe there is some sort of bad blood, but I guess you get the impression from reading the story that Dwayne was like, look, everybody can come up and, you know, train in Colorado. I'll be more than happy to do what I'm doing. I'm not going to ditch anybody through their fight camps. That's not what, it's not a clean break like, right. You know.
I'm not laying blame anywhere, but I'm certainly thinking about what could make somebody do that, because there's something broken somewhere in that communication line.
Well, obviously, if you think it's going to be May that you're going to start to talk about this idea, and an hour later Uriah Faber is, you know, on UFC Tonight and writing out press releases.
He's doing an AMA on Reddit about Dwayne Ludwig leaving their camp.
Clearly, there is some sort of shift in communication that's not being connected, and that'll kind of flush itself out. Dwayne, obviously, frustrated by what has happened, but he will continue to move forward and move out to his gym in Colorado, and we'll see what happens. And, you know, Joe, will remain to be seen, I should say, if any of these fighters are going to leave Alpha Male and go to Colorado.
Well, Dwayne said that he's actually not going to initially start a fight gym. It's going to be a traditional martial arts gym, not like Taekwondo, but his own Muay Thai system.
He's going to break boards.
Yeah. So part of the reason he left is because he doesn't like traveling with fighters, and because he wants to work for himself and be at home. Those were his big reasons.
Right.
He's got a young family and all. Little Bang is his son, and it's so cool to see his Little Bang videos and stuff.
Right.
Anyways, yeah, so he wants to have a constant income. He wants to have the guys like us who just enjoy training
sure.
and aren't necessarily fighting, and he gets a paycheck every month from that. And then from there, he was going to build a fight team, potentially. But that's not his goal right off the bat.
But I'm sure based on his experience, that's something in the back of his mind. I mean, I'm sure he's saying this right now so that it's not a mass exodus.
Yep.
You know, like you saw with the Black Zillions. Mm-hmm. You know, they went through that episode of Flux, and it was a giant exodus as everybody went to 9 other teams. And he obviously... whatever's going on between him and Uriah, he wants to maintain some sort of level of peace. So going, hey, I'm going to start a karate gym where we're going to break boards, and I'm going to train children, and we're going to do, and I'm not going to do anything with, you know, instead of going, I am starting the world's greatest training facility in Colorado, and I'm taking all of your fighters with me. He's going to do this instead, because I would be surprised if he just goes, well, I was pretty awesome at that for 12 months. Now I'm going to be a professional Call of Duty player. That's what I'm doing.
I'm going to teach soccer moms how to get rid of their belly fat.
Right. Yeah.
That's what I'm going to do now.
It's essentially what he said, though. Honestly,
I'm going to shift. No, and that could be part of it. It could just simply be preemptive on Uriah Faber's part, knowing that I don't want to let this guy actually have time to settle in and take half the fighters to his camp or his gym. So you know what? He's leaving. You make the choice now. It's just another version of business, another version of fighting. It's another version of competitiveness. And we've seen Uriah Faber. He's been the guy that puts the gyms together, that writes the books, that wants to expand past the brand of UFC. And this may just be another, some would call it, good business move. Like, you know, the guy's going to leave us. You don't get to affiliate with our brand anymore. Same thing happens in our business, Eric.
Yep.
Somebody decides to leave. You know what? You don't get our rub anymore. And maybe that's all this boils down to. It doesn't feel right, quote unquote. But business-wise, it's probably the best move at this point.
As of right now, Team Alpha Male is still going to be Dwayne Bang Ludwig Muay Thai affiliate. And Dwayne's actually been really successful with that. He's got, I'm guessing now, around 15 affiliates around the country, and he wants to build up that practice as well.
Very cool. Other news, BJ Penn and Edgar, they have finished up filming their Tough season, and we know when they're going to fight. It's going to be July 6th. They will headline the Tough finale, and that should be a fun fight to watch those two guys get back in the ring. Rich Franklin, we've been talking about this fight in Cincinnati against Little Nog. He has turned that down so he could focus on juicing. That's a real story.
Yeah. Is
juice.
This the end of it? I mean, is he going to retire after this?
Well, look, great guy, was a great fighter in his time. This seemed like his swan song.
I
we were talking about Dan Henderson moments ago. Yep. I don't know how much longer we can hang around and wait for Rich Franklin to, you know, stop messing with the pomegranate juice and come over and put a fight on, and that's fine. But at some point, I think you just got to say it out loud. Like, this has been really successful. This was my passion. You know, when I moved from teaching to mixed martial arts, health has always been a thing, and this was a way for me to kind of channel that. And the company's called Zenlin Juice.
Very marketable if you can't pronounce it.
They've got acai bowls.
Yes, and they're out. They're out in Beverly Hills, which is where they should be. And you know, he's.
What does that mean?
Well, they love that stuff. You know, the only two things they love are juice bars and pink berries.
Yeah,
you don't put them next to each other. And
you don't really drop that thing next to a Gold Star down in Cincinnati.
You're not going to take a bowl of Cincinnati chili and then go get your pomegranate juice, cold juice.
Do you think Rich Franklin is in the Hall of Fame talk?
I 1,000% yes. Yeah.
So perhaps they could do, you know, a very classy exit where they did an event and kind of.
Yeah, and but I just think you know, when you see this story, it should be followed up by, you know, I thought
something.
About it.
Yeah,
I should have taken this fight. Now I'm not going to. I'm good.
Sure.
I'll be in the Hall of Fame. I'll show up to sign autographs. I'll be at you know, the expo that they do every year in Vegas.
Yeah,
I'll show
yeah.
up at that thing. I'll make some figures for round five MMA. You know, that sort of deal. I just think time is running short. For as long as he's been out, it's kind of time to make that.
But we've always said with this guy that he would probably make that decision like that. Like, it would just be one day and we'd be done. Like, he wouldn't try to.
No.
He probably wouldn't try to milk it. He probably wouldn't try to take dumb fights. And, I mean, we're a little surprised because this was supposed to be an event down in Cincinnati and that he would have a chance to kind of fight in front of that hometown crowd. And, you know, you might see an interesting matchup there. He's simply saying, you know, I'm not doing that right now, and I'm not really surprised by it. A little disappointed, not at all surprised.
No, and I'm just saying, I expect that follow-up sometime soon because it seems obvious if you're not going to take this fight, which when Joe talks about a classy exit in your hometown against Lil Nog, that would be a great fight for everybody involved.
Yeah.
You don't want to fight it. That's totally cool. I would expect here in the next couple of weeks to hear the, I think I'm good.
Yeah, that might be it. Or you never know. A guy like Rich Franklin, he just really doesn't think now's the right time, and he'll be back in 6 months. I don't know.
We will see. And then been a lot of news about Ronda Rousey as of late. What are we going to do next with her? We've been covering that the UFC was in talks for the 400th time with Holly Holmes. And apparently the Holly Holm talk went bad.
I don't know who that is.
Of some sort. I'm not really sure what went wrong. It's always been money has been the rumor.
Yeah.
But it has gotten to the point where Dana's like, yeah, we're not interested in her right now, and they've stopped talking to Gina Carano, which is interesting. So now that Carano Ronda fight, and even Ronda was out going, it would be an honor to fight Gina, blah 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 blah,
right.
That doesn't seem to be coming to fruition. What's interesting is Cyborg, who we've been talking a lot about. She has a fight this weekend, and recently passed a random test. They showed up and tested her, and she passed it with flying colors. So I mean, is that where we're going?
Was that
the
a drug
word
test?
Was random, right?
Yeah.
Well, totally random.
Drug test.
Totally
yeah.
random, totally passed it.
Yeah, and Vitor actually had a random drug test when he hadn't even applied yet for an exemption. And that's the all the talk about, oh,
yes.
Did Vitor fail this test or
show
not?
Me
that
the
was
test,
actually
yeah.
random. So are we starting to see the Nevada Athletic Commission do random testing?
And
apparently we are.
I mean, I think we should. And in this case, I think it opens up a door for Cyborg that was seemingly shut. I mean,
yeah.
Dana has said, you know, pass a couple tests and then let's have this conversation. And if they're just showing up and going, hey, here, do this, and she passes it with flying colors, well, okay, now we're inching closer to the fight we actually want to see. Holly Holm would be a great fight, but as Ken alluded to, I don't know who that is.
Well,
that's going to be a problem.
That's definitely a problem. I mean, I found out who she is. I got the Google, so
the
going.
Google foo.
I mean, she certainly looks like somebody I'd like to see in the cage.
Well,
but
she, I mean,
her manager's a lunatic, according to Dana White just a couple months ago. So
yeah.
How does that work?
Well, and she puts on some brilliant performances and would be very exciting in the octagon, and somebody I think that they should at some point figure out how to work it out. But
well, the last time Dana said this about somebody's management, it was Fedor, and they couldn't get that to work for Fedor. So let's
yes.
not hold out
well,
hope for Holly Coombs or what's her name?
Holm.
It was
Holly
actually
Holm.
Gil Melendez, and that's when
her
Gil's...
name's actually Gil Melendez.
No.
Wow.
No.
Wow.
Dana,
where's
Dana
our breaking
had a
news
falling
sounder?
Out with Gil Melendez.
I do remember that, but I mean,
Bellator.
But as far as saying lunatic, that he used that word about not Gil Melendez's manager there.
Holly Holm. And one more story before we take a quick break here. We talk about random drug testing. This one might be to the extreme, and Joe, I don't know what you feel about this. I think even for who this fighter is, I think this is kind of ridiculous. Husamar Palhares kicked out of the UFC, obviously, for that fight where he held onto the ankle lock for too long. Fighting in the World Series of Fighting, has a fight coming up, and the Nevada Athletic Commission calls him and goes, oh, we need you to test here. So get on a plane, get out of your camp. Oh, I'm sorry. Bring your whole camp and
right.
finish your camp in Vegas because we need to do a test, and we need to do it right now, which he did. But I just think at some point there has to be some sort of threshold of insanity. Like, you can't just call Alexander Gustafsson in Sweden and be like, I mean,
right.
I know he trains in the States, but let's say he didn't. He still trains in Sweden and be like, all right, we need you in Vegas tomorrow. Get on a plane, stop what you're doing, and come pee in a cup.
What I don't get is there's WADA-certified testing centers around the world, right? you can't tell me there wasn't
not
a testing
in
center.
No,
it's in Brazil.
In Brazil.
That he could have gone to. He had to fly all the way back to Nevada.
So there's got to be something in Brazil. You got to get a tetanus shot every 3 weeks in Brazil, I assume. So there's got to be a medical facility there.
They've got Olympians there who need to be tested.
Here's where the story gets interesting. The fight is on next weekend, and the World Series of Fighting has already, quote, taken steps to ensure a contingency plan in the event that he fails the test. And Paul Harris's manager comes back and says, quote, I'm almost 100% sure he's going to come clean. I'm almost.
Yeah, but I wouldn't trust these guys either at this point, flying me from Brazil to Vegas to do a test.
Your manager should be like, no, he's totally going to pass this test.
Manager
what do you
shouldn't
mean,
say a
what
word.
Mean, what do you mean almost?
Well, because you don't trust those guys.
I could kind of, sort of, maybe, perhaps pass this test and then maybe sort of kind of fight on the 28th.
All right, right.
We will be back with some late breaking news. And then don't forget, we'll be covering everything that happens on Sunday night when you're done watching, you know, Downton Abbey. We will have your breaking results.
Hope nobody's fighting Lizzie. Girl, psychotic.
All right. We'll be back here in a second. It's Way of the Warrior, your MMA show.
Way of the Warrior. Way of the Warrior.
It is Way of the Warrior. Eric O'Brien along with Ken Evans, Joe B1 Kenobi holding everything down in the social arena, and of course covering everything on Facebook, Twitter, and statistically if we need any sort of backup on what's going on in the world of mixed martial arts. And lots of news going on. Broke while we were on the air, Mark Munoz and Gegard Mousasi, they are going to headline UFC Fight Night 41. Some people online excited about that fight, some people not so much. I think based on Gegard's last fight, I can see how you could be not that fired up, but still a solid headliner for UFC Fight Night 41. Another fight that was mentioned this week, which is really interesting, exciting, but a really interesting dichotomy when we talked earlier about how the rankings still have some issues. This is when that kind of shines through. As number one ranked light heavyweight or lightweight Benson Henderson, he's going to take on number 15 ranked Khabibov. We've talked a lot about Khabibov and what's next for him. It looks like he's going to go all the way up to the top of the list and essentially fight with somebody who could be a title contender or is a title contender at any point in his career in Benson Henderson. So a very interesting fight, something that a lot of people are looking forward to, but a very interesting, as far as ranking goes, interesting way to go from essentially zero to hero overnight. That will happen June 7th in Albuquerque, New Mexico. And then the other news that broke out this afternoon, if you've been reading all of the Anderson Silva stuff, you've seen him kick a bag, you've seen him striking, you've seen him doing jiu-jitsu. This week you saw him turning over tires. He is getting very strong, he's getting very healthy, but hang on! He wants you to know that this year is over for him. He is not going to fight in 2014, so if you expect to see him by the end of the year, according to him, that is something that is simply not going to happen. So we'll have to hang tight and see what happens with him. The event Sunday night, we will cover Hendo Shogun 2. You can follow on Twitter and Facebook at Wow Show, and anything else that you need all weekend long, we are there for you. All right, have a great weekend. We'll talk to you next week. It's Way of the Warrior.
Yeah, let's go.
Follow our Twitter account at Wow Show.
All right, okay.